Welcome to Friday, Explorers Club friends. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have the pleasure of meeting a very special author. When she was a child growing up in Chicago, books filled her house and they fueled her imagination. I wonder if you've read her book called I Love My Hair. It's about a young African-American girl who celebrates her beautiful hair and her heritage. It's about appreciating that there's only one you in this world. That's right, just you. That's it. Do you love to read? What is your favorite book? Do you dream of one day being an author? Here's the number. Grown-ups, lend a hand. Join in at 800-642-1234. Natasha Tarpley is a children's author. Her titles include the middle school mystery, The Harlem Charade. She has a podcast. It's called Opal Watson Private Eye. It's about a girl who solves mysteries. Natasha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. And I understand as a kid, you got read to all the time. Books were around you. Is that true? What was it like?
I think I was very lucky. Books were my friends. They were such an important part of my family's life. Both of my parents read to us as children. And just, I think, that experience really cultivated a sense of curiosity and imagination, at least in myself, at a very early age. So I feel very fortunate to have had that kind of upbringing.
Oh, and some, I'm sure, really good memories.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it true that you brought a story to read to us today?
I did. I brought a story that I really love to read myself and to have read to me when I was a kid. So I have three siblings, two sisters and one brother. I'm the oldest. So you can imagine as the oldest, you kind of get used to being by yourself for a while. And then all these other people start showing up. And so I brought a book called Peter's Chair by Ezra Jack Keats. And I really related to Peter's experience in this book when he gets a new sibling. So I thought I'd share that with you.
Lovely. Go ahead.
Okay. Peter stretched as high as he could. There, his tall building was finished. Crash! Down it came. Shh! Called his mother. You'll have to play more quietly. Remember, we have a new baby in the house. Peter looked into his sister Susie's room. His mother was fussing around the cradle. That's my cradle, he thought. And they painted it pink. Hi, Peter, said his father. Would you like to help paint sister's high chair? It's my high chair, whispered Peter. He saw his crib and muttered, my crib, it's painted pink too. Not far away stood his old chair. They didn't paint that yet, Peter shouted. He picked it up and ran to his room. Let's run away, Willie, he said. That's his dog. Peter filled a shopping bag with cookies and dog biscuits. We'll take my blue chair, my toy crocodile, and the picture of me when I was a baby. Willie got his bone. They went outside and stood in front of his house. This is a good place, said Peter. He arranged his things very nicely and decided to sit in his chair for a while. But he couldn't fit in the chair. He was too big. His mother came to the window and called, won't you come back to us, Peter, dear? We have something very special for lunch. Peter and Willie made believe they didn't hear, but Peter got an idea. Soon his mother saw signs that Peter was home. And you guys can't see the illustrations, but there's a curtain and there's a pair of shoes peeking out from beneath. Mm-hmm. That rascal is hiding behind the curtain, she said happily. She moved the curtain away, but he wasn't there. Here I am, shouted Peter. He's behind a piece of furniture, another piece of furniture. Peter sat in a grown-up chair. His father sat next to him. "Daddy," said Peter, "let's paint the little chair pink for Susie." And they did. And that is Peter's chair. So what? I loved that book growing up.
Oh, that is so lovely. Thank you for reading it to us. And Ezra Jack Keats, who was such a pioneer in children's literature and really believed that children should be able to see themselves in their books.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the reasons why we had so many books of his around our house, because they were featuring African-American kids, kids who look like us, at a time when there really weren't that many books that featured kids who look like us. So that was very special to have that.
He also wrote the Snowy Day. And
yes.
Yeah, that's the book that I remember so much. And the illustrations, too, that are so simple and yet they really speak to us. What do you appreciate about picture books?
I love picture books because, as you said, the illustrations really bring us into a whole new world and a whole new experience. The stories too are, I wrote a picture book, the I Love My Hair book that you mentioned early on. Picture books bring us into a whole new world of language too. And when I was writing that book, one of the things that I kind of found challenging at first was how to tell a big story in a small space. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that picture books can do. They can talk about really big and important things. They can talk about things that we experience in our everyday lives in such a small space and a small, beautifully illustrated space. So I think that's what I love most about picture books.
And the really remarkable ones really stand the test of time. I mean, your
yes.
picture book, I Love My Hair, you know, you wrote that in the 90s.
Absolutely. And the book just celebrated its 20th anniversary in 2018. So it's been around for a while.
What is the relationship like with a mother and daughter that you try to convey with I Love My Hair?
I want to convey a relationship that is nurturing and warm, but one that also inspires creativity. In fact, the inspiration for I Love My Hair came from this game that my mother and I used to play as she was combing my hair. We would pretend that there were people who were living in my hair. And so as she got to each section of my hair, we would have a character who lived in that section and we would make up stories about that character. Of course, this also functioned to kind of distract me from the process of getting my hair combed. But it was also a really special time when, you know, we just had fun. We were just using our imagination. We were creating stories. We were creating characters. And I think that really served also to open up that space in my own imagination. Where I could start to tell stories of my own.
We are exploring books and creativity with our very special author guest, Natasha Tarpley. Do you dream of one day being an author? Do you right now? What are your questions for Natasha about publishing, about creative writing? Here's the number, Grownups 2. We're at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Natasha Tarpley right here on the Ideas Network. Oh, what a pleasure to have you along with us, friends. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're learning all about the writer, Natasha Tarpley. She started writing when she was 7 years old. From a pretty young age, she realized stories could shape what we think, and stories can change the world. Natasha has written some stories about kids who spend their time solving mysteries. Do you like mysteries? Mystery novels? Mystery shows? Or maybe you like to solve mysteries on your own. My 9-year-old got a detective kit for his birthday. It is super cool. So let's hear from you. Here comes that number again. It's 800-642-1234. And Natasha Tarpley stays with us. Natasha, let's explore your podcast, Opal Watson Private Eye, about a girl who loves solving mysteries. And we're going to take a quick listen here.
That's the thing about mysteries. They often have more questions than answers. But I'll get to the bottom of all of it. I always do. I'm Opal Watson, Private Eye.
Oh, give us some introductions here to Opal.
So Opal is an 11-year-old young lady. She lives in Chicago. She is curious. She's brave. She's persistent. And she just happens to have her own mystery-solving business where she solves mysteries in her neighborhood and in her apartment building. And she, you know, really helps her neighbors in that way. And as the series goes on, the mysteries start getting a little bit bigger, a little bit more interesting. And so we get to not only follow Opal along her detective journey, but we also see her kind of developing some new skills and learning how to navigate her world in new ways. So,
how do you think up the mysteries that she may have to tackle?
I think about where Opal lives. She lives in an apartment building in a neighborhood in Chicago, which is where I'm from. And I think about what happens in those places. So, for example, the very first mystery that Opal solves is a neighbor who wants to help her, who wants her help in finding a lost kitten. And so Opal goes on the hunt within her building. She gets some kind of clues that the kitten may still be in the building. So she goes on the hunt and finds the kitten within her apartment building. There are other things that come up where neighbors are missing packages and Opal's on the case to figure out what happened to those packages. So I think about, you know, what's going on and or what might be going on in Opal's everyday life in the setting where she lives.
I think about neighborhood in your stories, and I'm wondering, why is it important to love our neighborhood, to look at how it changes, and to take care of it?
I think our neighborhoods, we kind of, I won't say we take them for granted, but I think we get used to experiencing them and kind of living in these places. And we don't really take the time to think about, you know, what all happened here before we got here, or what's even happening in our neighborhoods now. For example, where I live in Chicago, I live in a neighborhood called Historic Pullman, which happens to be the factory town where the Pullman rail cars were manufactured. And these cars were used for travel on railroad trains. And they were special because they were, for the first time, people could sleep and eat in these cars. And so they really changed the nature of how people travel on trains. And those cars, those railroad cars, were manufactured right in my neighborhood. And so it's kind of interesting to know all of those things and to learn about the people and the stories that existed here before I did. We have a whole project where in our neighborhood, someone has done a study of who lived in your home before you did. So it could have been a family. It could have been a group of workers who were even sharing space, sharing beds within your apartment. Like one person might, you know, have worked one shift and then another person is sleeping and then that person goes to work and another person comes home and sleeps in that same bed. So you really learn a lot when you take time to think about your neighborhoods and the history that's there.
It's kind of like when you think about the phrase, you know, oh, if these walls could speak, if they could tell us things.
Absolutely. And then when your neighborhoods start to change, some of that history may disappear unless we decide that it's important enough to preserve it, to learn about it, and to tell those stories. And so I feel like history teaches us so much about who we are as a society, how we live, how our society has evolved from the past, and where we might want to go in the future. And so I think it's very important to kind of think about those things. And there's so many of those stories right there in the places where we live.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Natasha Tarpley. She's the author of the best-selling book, I Love My Hair, and other books for kids. We're learning about her life as a writer and where she finds inspiration. And we want to hear from you. Where do you find inspiration from the books you read? What new and insightful things can you glean from the neighborhood you live in? Maybe it's a prompt for you to write about where you live. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Natasha, let's hear some more of Opal's story. There's a man who just moved to her neighborhood named Mr. Vincennes. Is that how you pronounce his name, Mr. Vincennes?
Actually, it's spelled that way. Okay. It's actually Mr. Vincennes.
Oh, Mr. Vincennes. And one day, she and her friend run into him when they're looking for clues in the stairwell.
Ms. Watson, Mr. Gunn, fancy running into you here.
Mr. Vincennes.
Are you two spying in the stairwell? You on a case?
No. I mean, maybe. We're just...
going to visit an old friend.
Ah, yes. Good to stay connected.
Well, nice seeing you, Mr. Vincennes. We gotta run. Can't keep our friend waiting. Sorry, Mr. Vincennes. Here, let me help you. Whew. Sure, a lot of packages here. Been doing a lot of shopping.
That's none of your concern, Mr. Good.
I didn't mean to offend
you. I think that's everything. Thank you for your help. I'm sure I'll be seeing you around.
Ooh, there's a bit of tension in there. That's intense.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mr. Vincennes, he is a very interesting character.
Why is Opal so suspicious of him?
Well, he shows up one day out of the blue. Opal is actually coming home after solving another mystery and lo and behold, finds Mr. Vincennes in her living room visiting with her family. And it turns out that Mr. Vincennes is an old friend of her grandmother, Mémé Augustine, who lives with her family, she and her parents. And right away, Opal's suspicious because her grandmother is a very warm and lovely person. But around Mr. Vincennes, she kind of turns into somebody else, or she doesn't seem to like him very much. And so Opal is kind of immediately suspicious about that. And then you've heard Mr. Vincennes' voice. He sounds kind of creepy. And so when you combine those two things, you know, he has a very different kind of energy. And Opal's like, what's going on with this guy? And so he becomes a very interesting part of her story.
How does Opal keep her cool? How does she keep her head about her?
I think Opal, if I understand you correctly, I think Opal keeps her cool by really being focused on her work. Mm-hmm. She is so committed to solving mysteries, and she uses all of her senses to do that. And if, as you listen to the podcast, you'll get a better sense of why she does that. But she's very focused on her work. She takes it very seriously. She's got her phone where she uses to record things. She's got her notebook. And I think that's one of the ways that she you know, is able to kind of not get so caught up in some of the other, the scarier elements of the mysteries or other things that are going around on around her.
She's very prepared.
Yes, very prepared.
We're exploring the world with a very special author who is coming to us from Chicago. Natasha Tarpley's children's books include I Love My Haircut and The Harlem Charade. Do you love to read? What are your favorite books? Do you express your creativity in other ways? Maybe you paint. Maybe you draw comics. What do you like to do to get into a super creative mode? Here's that number, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Don't go anywhere. We get to talk more with Natasha Tarpley right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Welcome to Friday, Explorers Club friends. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have the pleasure of talking with a very special author, Natasha Tarpley. When she was growing up, her parents read to her a lot. Her book called I Love My Hair was inspired by her relationship with her mom and the ritual of doing her hair. And she says it's really important to just write, to try things in your writing. Don't be afraid to explore with different forms of expression. Do you like to write or to keep a journal? How does writing stories make you feel about the world around you and your neighborhood? What do you want to know about the publishing process? Join in. Grown-ups, feel free. You too. We're at 800-642-1234. And Natasha Tarpley is our guide to writing. Natasha, let's talk more about I Love My Hair, about Kiana. And Kiana's mom brushes her hair every single day. And when her hair is tangled, it hurts, of course. Let's hear some of that.
Mama, stop, I cry when I can't stand the comb tugging at my hair any longer. Mama puts the comb down and rubs my hurting places. Then she leans in close to me like she has a big secret to tell. Do you know why you're so lucky to have this head of hair, Kiana? She asks. I shake my head no. Because it's beautiful and you can wear it in any style you choose. I can spin your hair into fine, soft yarn, just like our grandmothers did at their spinning wheels, and weave it into a puffy little bun. Or I can part your hair into straight lines and plant rows of braids along your scalp, the way we plant seeds in our garden, then wait and watch for them to grow.
Oh, what a beautiful passage there. How does Kiana come around with understanding her hair and her heritage?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, and that really special nurturing space that she and her mom have when they're performing this ritual, which is such an intimate ritual. When you're sitting down and someone is combing your hair, you're in close proximity. You're very close together. And then that special ritual of kind of grooming one another or making one another look beautiful is such a special ritual to share with another person. And so I think that space in and of itself helps Kiana to start to relax. And I think her mom also, as I was saying earlier, the way my mom sort of encouraged me to use my imagination and be creative, her mom opens up that space for her as well. And so she can start to envision her hair in all of these different ways. And she can also learn about her hair through some of the stories that they tell and some of the things that they talk about during that time period during that special moment.
Right. And during that special moment, I mean, she's kind of a captive audience there when she...
Yeah, absolutely.
What do kids at school, how do they treat Kiana and her hair?
Well, Kiana does talk about a moment where she decided to wear her afro to school, and a few of the kids teased her. And that made her feel kind of sad, but she also learned that that particular hairstyle had a lot of meaning and a lot of significance in the African-American history. It is a way, it was a symbol of pride, of people, you know, really showing off their natural hair and being who they are. And that Kiana felt really connected to that sense of history as well. And I think we all have things, you know, it may not be your hair, but I think we all have things that make us feel a little different. Maybe we don't like the shape of our nose, or maybe we wish we were taller, or we wish we were shorter, or whatever that may look like for you. And my hope is that even though this is a book about hair, that, you know, kids of all backgrounds and all experiences will relate to this, because, you know, we all have something that we feel is different, but that is also a very unique and special and wonderful part of who we are.
Body image can be so difficult for kids and adults. And some kids are teased, some kids are bullied in ways. How can they get through it and learn to love their body?
I think it's really it's a tough thing. And I when I was growing up, I was a little chubby, and I was teased for that at school, and that was a really tough time for me. One of the ways that I was able to get through that was I was lucky to have, you know, a really close and nurturing family. And so I felt, you know, really accepted at home. And, you know, and I had a couple of friends at school that really helped me as well. And one of the things I also did was when I felt very uncomfortable, if there were times like that, I would tell my teachers, and I would look for people at school who would intervene on my behalf. And I think it's sometimes hard for kids to feel comfortable talking to people about what's going on. But I think that's probably one of the first steps, to talk to someone that you trust, an adult who can intervene. For example, there were boys at one of my schools that teased me. And I told one of my teachers, and she talked to those boys on my behalf. And, you know, that really helped. So I wish I had, you know, just one answer to say, do this and everything will be okay. And I also grew up at a time where, you know, we didn't have the social media, so like that we have today. And so it was pretty much, if something was happening, it was happening in that one place at school. So it wasn't following me into my, you know, home or anything like that. So
there wasn't this digital universe.
Right, there wasn't the digital universe where these things are happening. So yeah. I think that makes it even more important to let people know what's going on, and to allow people in your life, adults in your life, to help you. And so that, yeah, it's a really tough time. And I think books are also really good to kind of show you that you're not by yourself, that there are people who are experiencing some of the very same things that you're experiencing. And if nothing else, that just, you know, may help you to feel like, you know, I'm not the only person who is experiencing this, and I can also get past it. I can get through it.
We're talking with Natasha Tarpley. She's the author of I Love My Hair and other books for kids. We're exploring her world of writing and books, and you can join in with your questions about writing and the process of being creative and knowing your neighborhood. 800-642-1234. Natasha, did you ever turn to journaling or poetry or writing in some way to get through difficult times?
Absolutely. And I kept a journal for most of my years growing up. And I don't journal as much, but I definitely have a notebook where I keep all of my ideas and I write down, you know, thoughts that I may have. My journals were not only to help me get through difficult times, but there were places where I really could just express who I was and what I was thinking. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a British punk rock star. And so my journals were the places where I kept all of my bands that I liked, all of the different British words and the American words, you know, how we called things differently. Mm-hmm. We speak English, but sometimes we use different words for the same thing. And I actually, this is really interesting. I practiced signing my name in my journals because I knew that I was just going to be this famous star and people were always going to be asking for my autograph. And then as it turns out, you know, I'm not a famous British punk rock star, but I do sign my name quite a bit on my books. And
on your book tour. Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
So that was kind of fun.
Well, let's take a call now. Margie is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I have, my oldest granddaughter is 16, and she has been writing for a couple of years and journals constantly. And she and three of her friends co-wrote a book a couple of years ago. And their English teacher encouraged them to try and self-publish. And that didn't go anywhere. I think they thought that that was just too daunting. And how could I encourage them or show them some resources about that?
Great question, Margie. Natasha, what would you suggest?
Well, first of all, kudos to your granddaughter and her friends. That's awesome that they wrote a first book at that age. And I always encourage kids to start writing and publishing at that age. I don't know which resources your granddaughter used for self-publishing, but I know that there are lots of them out there. And some of them are vanity presses where, you know, you have to pay or you have to do that. But there are other platforms where you can publish for free or less money. I don't have them at the mm-hmm. ready right now.
Yeah.
But I would also encourage them, if they're really serious about it, to submit to publishers. There are several publishers where they can send their manuscript. There are people who called literary agents who they can explore. These people will try to sell their books to publishers.
Well, let's pause there. We'll be back in a minute. We'll talk more here with Natasha Tarpley in just a moment on the Ideas Network. It's Friday, and you're with us for Explorers Club. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with our special author guest, Natasha Tarpley. She wrote the picture books I Love My Hair and I Love My Haircut. Her middle grade mystery is called The Harlem Charade, and she stays with us for 10 more minutes. Natasha, as we were talking there about Margie's granddaughter and writing a book with her friends at the age of 16, you were telling us about the role of agents and how they might be able to represent the book. Can you explain that relationship for us?
Sure. So oftentimes an author will write a book, and there's so many publishers out there. There's so many places where you could go to submit the book, but it's quite daunting to think about, you know, how to do that. And so agents are kind of like the middleman. They take the author's book and they share it with the publishers and the editors that they know, and try to sell the book to a publishing house. So they essentially do that work for you. And if I could, I just wanted to make one other comment before the break. We were talking about alternatives in terms of publishing, and I was also thinking that Margie's granddaughter might want to consider doing an electronic book or an ebook, or even publishing in a format on the website, on a website where she can publish in a serial way, which means maybe publishing chunks of the book at different points in time to get readers engaged and excited about the book. And a lot of times, if there are enough readers and enough interest, publishers will also take an interest in that.
Yeah, they'll take note, and that could be a launching pad there.
Yes, absolutely. So think about publishing beyond just a physical book. There are all kinds of ways to get your work out there online as well.
Could we peek into your writing habits and like where you like to write and what it looks like where you write?
Sure. I write in my home. I have an office. I have bookshelves along one wall. I have a very, very messy desk that I'm always trying to clean. And I don't necessarily have a strict writing schedule, but I try to get to my office as soon as I get up. So I'll get up, I'll make a cup of coffee, and then I'll come into my office. And usually for me, in order to stay organized, I try to make a plan for what I want to achieve during that day. I make a list of what project I'm going to work on and where I want to go in that project. For example, I might say I want to work on this particular book and I want to get to this chapter, or I want to finalize this decision that I'm trying to make about what this character is going to decide to do, whether they're going to take this action or go along this path. So I try to make a plan for myself so that I can stay focused.
What happens when you get writer's block, when it just doesn't come to you?
That's the hardest thing, because the inclination is to just try to keep figuring it out. I get frustrated. I sit at my computer, I sit at my desk, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. And eventually I usually get up, walk away, go for a walk or a run, listen to music, read someone else's work, and just give my brain a little bit of space to work it out. And I think that's an important part of that. Working at it and sitting down again is definitely also important, but giving your brain space to kind of just, you know, not even focus on this thing, but just give it space to kind of dream and, you know, focus on something else for a minute, I find often helps.
You might, you might have a messy desk, but you seem really organized. Are you a list maker?
I am. I make lists religiously. And when I write, I also like to make outlines of what I'm doing. So that really helps me to stay on track as well. So if I'm working on a story, I like to outline what I know. I may not know the whole story yet, but I'd like to outline what I know, or what I think I know, about what's going to happen in that story.
What is it like working with your editor? How is that relationship?
I've been really lucky. I've had great editors. And so when you write something, and I think kids can relate to this too, when they write something in school, when you guys are writing papers and your teacher will read them and they'll give you comments back, like they'll say, oh, put a comma here, or they'll say, maybe you can explore this idea a little bit more. That's kind of like what an editor does. They do both things. They do things like what they call line editing, which is literally, you know, it could be anything from, I think you should take this comma out, I think you should, you know, put a period here or make this sentence shorter. And they also help you to think about the bigger ideas of what you're trying to write. So maybe if you're telling a story and some aspect of the story isn't quite clear, an editor will kind of help you work through that and to make your story the best possible story that it can be.
So both on the more macro level and the micro level to help move that book along.
Yes.
Yeah. Talking with Natasha Tarpley this hour, author of the book I Love My Hair and many other books for kids. We're learning all about her creative process and the books she loves and loves to write. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Natasha, you've made it a really important part of your job to make sure that stories about all kinds of different people, that they're out there in the world. Why is that important to you?
Well, we talked a little bit about that earlier. I think when you see yourself reflected in a book or when you see an experience that you've had or are having reflected in a story, it really helps you to kind of connect more to who you are and connect more to the world. And so stories also connect us to one another. So it could be that you connect to something that you relate to, but someone else will connect to your story too. Someone you may not even expect will connect to a story that you tell. Mm-hmm. And we build connections to one another in that way too.
I understand you speak a bit of German.
Yeah, nur ein bisschen. Only a little.
How did German come into your life?
When I was in school, we had a choice. We had a choice in second grade of taking a foreign language. That's when we started foreign language. And so we could take French or German. And everybody wanted to take French, including me, because that was, for some reason, everyone decided that was the cool language. And my mom kind of made me take German because my aunt had studied German in college and she was saying, oh, she can help you with your homework. You guys can practice. So I was kind of stuck with German, but I actually really connected to the language and I stuck with it throughout college and recently spent a little bit of time in Berlin. So it's an odd thing, but it just became part of my life.
That's so neat. And to see that it really was part of your college career as well.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know. Maybe she knew something that was inside of you that you didn't realize.
Maybe. She often does. So maybe.
We only have a few seconds left, but what is that relationship like with your mom today?
We are the best of friends. We're very close. And she has been the person who I, you know, when I write something, I will give it to her first to read. When we were growing up, she wrote stories for me and my siblings. And I believe that really also helped shape my interest in writing. So she's definitely just a really important, significant part of my life.
Oh, Natasha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Natasha Tarpley, and you can check out more podcasts made just for kids at pinna.fm. You can check out the entire Explorers Club series featuring amazing conversations with authors and scientists and thinkers. It's all in one place. Go to wpr.org/kids. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thank you for being part of the Explorers Club on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.